All right, let's do this. How are you, what the fuckers? What the fuck buddies? What the fucking ears? What the fuckadelics? What the fuck nicks? What's happening? I'm Mark Maron. This is my podcast, WTF. How's it going? So today on the show, sort of, I don't know if it's certainly not an off the grid guest, but it might not be a guest that you would assume I would have on the show. The singer and songwriter and pop phenom. She's great. Lord is here. Well, she was, I talked to her the other day. She was here in this garage with me, sitting right over there. Big pop star, Lord. And I'm old, but I got to be honest with you. You know, I'll tell you why. I like her a lot. I actually love her voice. She moves me. What can I tell you? So when I got the opportunity to talk to her, I took it. My buddy John Daniel, who you've heard on this show, is actually her manager right now at this point, his company and him. But I don't know if it came through him. It must have come through him somehow. But, you know, we get pitched people and I'm like, I'll talk to Lord. I like Lord. She works a lot on this new album with Jack Antonoff, who I've had on the show, who I also like. You know, I'm not a pop fanatic, but I can certainly appreciate it. I'm always sort of astounded by people that manufacture the big pop music. So that's going to happen. That's going to happen right in your ears here in a minute. I'm going to talk to Lord. I know it's weird, right? It was weird for me too, believe me. Felt a little nervous, you know? It's a little generational difference. But I can hang with the youngsters, with the folks, the young people. I can. The special is up and out. My special, Too Real, is available on Netflix, and you can go watch it. I'm very happy with it. I'm proud of it. It looks good. It's a whole piece of work. People are digging it. I'm getting a lot of good feedback. I appreciate it, and I'm glad you like it. I'm glad you're getting some laughs. It's very laugh efficient, this special. What else is happening? Still no nicotine, man. Still no nicotine. And I, you know, it's made me a little, I'm not sure what's happening now. I'm drinking tea because I got off the coffee with the nicotine. And I'm not, I don't think I'm very good at, you know, always paying attention to ordering online. Because I like the PG tips. I like the British tea. So I ordered some British tea, but I didn't realize that I got a bag of 1,150 tea bags. So this fucking pillow-sized bag, you know, it's delivered to my house. And I'm like, this is too much pressure. Like, that's a lifetime's worth of tea. And I literally mean that. I don't know how much I'm going to drink. I don't drink it every day. That tea could outlive me at this point. And that kind of bothers me because then this bag of 1,100 tea bags becomes this harbinger of doom. Like, am I going to outlive this bag of tea? That looks awkward. It's just a lot of pressure. I've got a little tin that I can put like 60, 70 bags in, but then there's another 1,100. This is the problem with bulk. It's too much pressure. I guess the nicotine, the lack of nicotine is not helping my clarity per se, is what I'm saying. And also there comes the question of where's it going to go next? You know, when you have an addictive personality, like, and you, if you really got it and you get rid of one, it's going to, where's it going to show up? It's whack-a-mole business. So where's it going to come out? I mean, it's going to be like I got Lord on the show coming up here, and I know there's going to be young people listening, but with this addiction thing, first of all, try to avoid it. If you're a young person and you're listening, don't vape the nicotine because that's a lifelong commitment. Try to not do the meth because, again, your teeth will fall out and your hair will fall out. The weed is a little insidious. I mean, if you can handle it, fine. If you like it, okay. Maybe you don't think it's a big deal to smoke some weed or vape some weed every day, but it could become your life, and it can distance you from reality. So stay aware of that. Lay off the opiates, all right? Because that's a lifelong commitment if you live. If you don't know me and you're just tuning in, I've got 18 years sober, but I was doing the nicotine lozenges for a long time. And now I've taken them away. So either I'm going to start eating, which I've already begun. The eating has commenced. the filling the pie hole constantly has already commenced. So now it's just a matter of preparing enough healthy food to shove into my face when I eat compulsively. So this is where I'm at now. A lot of work in the kitchen. There's a lot of stuff being prepared. Sweet potatoes, yams, mushrooms. I cooked some cabbage, brown rice, chopped a jicama up. That's not an easy thing to get that skin off a jicama. So now I've got all these healthy snacks, so I'm just shoveling that into my face. So that's active. Now, the one you got to worry about is the one that we keep in our pants. That addiction can be a little gnarly. Thankfully, I have a girlfriend, but you know, there's always the internet, and that's no way to spend a day and feel good about yourself. You don't want to spend a day, you know, just pulling at that thing or rubbing at that thing, you know. I mean, it's nice. It'll get you away, but you don't finish and feel great. So I'm trying to, you know, manage that. Right now, it looks like we're moving a lot of stuff into the face, which can become a problem. It's all part of a bigger cycle. Eventually, I'm going to be like, I'm going to just have a cup of coffee. Eventually, I'd be like, I'm going to maybe have a cigar. And then eventually, you're going to hear me sucking on those lozenges again. I've certainly got enough tea. That I can tell you. So, Lord. Oh, Lord, Lord. Yes, Lord is here. Now, I got to be honest with you. I enjoy Lord's music, and I seek it out. And sometimes when I'm working out at the gym with my trainer, I'll have her put on a Lord station. The first time I saw Lord, I saw her at that when they induced Nirvana. Would somebody please? They induced Nirvana into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. They inducted, and Lord did a song, and I was like, "What? Who is this girl? What is happening? What is this voice? What is this intensity? What is this talent? Where does this come from?" And then I saw her in SNL not long ago, and I'm like, "There she is again. What is this voice? What are these feels?" See, I'm using the language. What are these feels I'm feeling? And I tried to wrap my brain around something that it's very hard to explain. You can't just go like, "Why do you move me with that voice of yours? Where does that come from, youngster?" That's not the right approach. But I think I did all right. Her second album, Melodrama, came out in June, and the Melodrama World Tour kicks off later this month. This was recorded just 3 days after the VMAs, where she did her flu-inspired dance, and she was on the mend a bit when this was recorded. Still a little flu-y. So that's where we're at. This is me and Lord.
Those ladies come, those hot ladies, the drip doctors. Do you know about this?
Who are they? What? The drip? The what?
You can just pay these ladies $200 and they will come and just shoot you up with this cocktail. It could be for a hangover. It could be a semi-professional sports person.
And they'll shoot you like what? With like B12s?
It's like all the B's, all the C's, all the electrolytes, you know. But it's like the start of a porno. They're like in their little uniforms. They're like so cute, you know. And
such
like,
a, it seems like such a Hollywood thing to me.
It's so fucking, I mean, you could not find that in New Zealand. They wouldn't do that for you. It's not a service.
No, it's not a service anywhere.
No.
it's like a completely.
I had it. So I'm hoping it's going to help me.
It's a complete. Well, no, I mean.
Help me recover.
Vitamins are good. How could it be bad? Vitamins are good.
I think it's fine, right? I think it's.
But like the real question is, you're about to do. Was this before you did the VMAs or after?
This was maybe an hour and a half pre-VMAs. Just the time you want to have a drip directly. Right.
So it's like an IV drip?
It's an IV drip, yeah, so, they just push it in.
So, like, what I want to know is, like, what was the, like, what's probably more interesting than them coming or whatever that job is, these like, emergency holistic practitioners.
Hotties, holistic hotties.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Is that, like, was who, like, the real question is, like, who knew them? Who was like, oh, I know who we got to call. Which department did that come from?
Ha ha! Yeah, I have a lot of departmental heads. I just sort of like I mean, my tour manager handles people way fancier than I am and is like very used to.
Not my friend, not John.
No, this is, his name is Richard Coble. And he looks after, like, he's looked after a lot of, like, famous divas in history.
Like?
I mean, like, you know, like Madonna.
Oh, really? Oh, really?
You know, like the whole.
Oh, so he's really, he's run quite a circus.
He's used to, like, I think asking for a vitamin drip at 3 p.m. on the day of the VMAs is like a chill ass.
Yeah, yeah.
He's
yeah.
like, that's easy.
No problem. I know exactly who to call.
Yeah, yeah. The drip doctors.
The disposing of a body thing, that's a little trickier.
I think he even would be okay with that.
Of course he would.
I will make it happen.
He's a tour manager.
Yeah.
I got a guy.
Yeah.
I got, what town are we in? Oklahoma City? I know a guy here.
Exactly.
So but you started Googling, and then what was the panic? What did you come up with? What did you self-diagnose?
Well, I thought that I had toxic shock syndrome, which every woman is afraid of. You get it from, like, using tampons.
Was that
right?
Is that still a thing? I didn't know if that was...
I mean, I don't know. I read about one girl who had amputation from toxic shock.
God.
So I think I'm like, that's just going to stay in my mind. But it's like every girl's secret fear is that they're going to get toxic shock.
I guess that, like, to me, it's
I don't
not
think dudes are too stressed about...
No, I don't have problems with that generally. Yeah. But I mean, yes. I remember hearing about that a lot. And then it just sort of was out of the news. But why wouldn't it still be frightening to women?
Yeah, I decided I had that. And I was, you apparently get itchy hands and feet. And I, like, my foot started to itch. And I was like, that's it. The big show's calling. They're summoning me up to the big show. It's time.
Is that what you call it? The big show?
The big show, yeah. Pop on up to the big show.
You don't want to be sick when you get to the big show.
No, no.
So how long have you been in town for?
I've been in town since last Wednesday or Thursday.
And do you come here a lot?
I come here about as little as I can help.
Yeah?
Yeah.
What's your feeling about it? Like when you come to, I mean... Look, I know you've been at it since you were like 13, and you, like your entrance, you understand to some degree what show business looks like from the top level. You know, you kind of came in at the, you know.
I still find it like very...
No, it's got to be weird as fuck.
Puts me ill at ease. It's still a strange thing for me.
Yeah.
But I...
Like
I
what
mean,
part of it? You land in L.A., the car comes.
Well, you land in L.A., all the fucking paparazzi are at the airport.
Oh, they're there.
And so you dream about paparazzi for the next 2 weeks.
Are they going, hey, Lord!
Of course.
Lord!
And like,
over here, Lord!
Well, but yeah, but they're like...
Do they call you by your regular
touching
name?
Touching your face. Oh, never. No, it's always Lord.
What am I supposed to call you? Because that was sort of awkward. That was awkward out
I
on the
I feel really
there.
Bad. I didn't even make that up. You were shouting, Lord, Lord, and I was walking the other way.
Yeah, and you were going down my hill. You were going down the hill.
What is down that hill?
Nothing, just another
chickens?
Patio.
You have chickens down
I
there?
I should have chickens.
You should.
There are people who have chickens around here.
Chickens are very hip. It's
did you grow up with chickens?
I did not, but I grew up with every other animal.
Are you serious?
You can imagine.
Like what?
Anything from
dogs, cats,
axolotls,
gerbils.
Dogs, cats, guinea pigs, rats, mice, baby mice.
What's an axolotl?
An axolotl is like a walking water snake.
Oh my God! Is that a pet in New Zealand?
That's a chill pet. Yeah, there are axolotls bumping around. We had it all. We had many fish.
Yeah, sure, fish.
We got a lot of pets.
So what do people call? What is your name? What should I call you?
Ella. So my name is Ella.
Ella.
Yes.
Just Ella.
Exactly.
All right. So I'm yelling Lord like an idiot.
And I'm just
not
ignoring
you.
Not
turning around. I'm like, that, of course that's not her
name.
Do
I call you Mark?
Yeah, Mark is good.
Mark, good. Okay, cool. Perfect.
I'm sorry. I couldn't resist.
Please.
I can't resist it.
Jack Antonoff, who you've met.
I love Jack.
Yeah, the best. He
Jack's
just
like
rips the shit out of my accent all the time. But his favorite word is festival.
Festival.
He goes, festival? We're going to the festival. I'm like, all right. Come on.
It's
been 2 years.
My manager's Australian, and it's hard not to make fun of it.
I get it.
It's different.
It's
like,
weird. It's
yours is a little, it's like Australian, but then just a little further tweaked. Like, it makes perfect sense in the proximity.
Oh, good.
The difference in the accent, right?
Yes.
Because you can
so.
Tell the difference, right?
Oh, deeply. Yeah.
All right, so you get past the wall of paparazzi. They drive you off to the fancy hotel.
Yeah, it's just, it's like so... far away from like what my life is, and I think I mean, just New Zealand and America are such different places, and it's something I
Thank
would
God.
Never get used to in my life.
How many people are like, I'm coming? Is there? Do you know a neighborhood I should live in? I'm about ready to How much?
A lot of people have hit me up. I've been like, I have a spare room. You know, you can take turns. It's a nice spare room. It's so fucking crazy how different it is. And even like, you know, every product here I feel like is like...
Yelling at you?
They're yelling, but they're yelling in this like voice that makes me feel like an idiot. No ouchies. You know, it's like, what the fuck is that? I'm an adult. Like, just tell me the product's going to work. You know what I mean? Like,
sure.
There's a lot of like weird cartoon shit.
Sure. Products seek to infantilize everybody. That's the way the American economy is built, on making sure they hide it better in New Zealand.
They mask it.
Oh, they do?
They mask it.
Is it more practical there?
It's much more practical. But also, like, I think there's a thing here which is like, they would never, like, I feel like every ad here, it can be an ad for like children's vitamins, and then they're like, may cause.
Oh, yeah.
List of serious ailments.
They gotta do that. Yeah, that's like a law.
Oh my god, yeah. We're really going there.
they don't do that right away. Yeah, internal bleeding.
Yeah, they fucking go there right on TV.
Never-ending diarrhea.
Yes, active diarrhea, as they call it. When you stay at a hotel, they say don't swim in the pool if you have active diarrhea.
I've never heard that in my life.
Is disgusting.
Where did you
go to any pool in West Hollywood? The little sign will say, "Do not swim with active diarrhea."
It says, well, maybe. I didn't know.
It really snaps you out of that. Motel reverie. You know, you're like, okay, fuck. Right.
It snaps you out of your spa day.
Yeah.
Just wondering who's like,
who's active.
Yeah, who's active and not following the rules. So, we need to talk about New Zealand. I think.
Yes. What do you want to know?
You just live there in a neighborhood.
I live there in a neighborhood.
But you grew up there your whole life.
I grew up there my whole life,
and it's beautiful, right?
Everything about it is beautiful. I mean, it has problems like any country. Well, we have a real, we have a housing crisis going on right now, which sucks. And it's like,
what does that mean? Too many rich people bought up the old houses?
Pretty much. I'm definitely part of that problem, I think.
Oh, you are?
I bought a house in the last 2 years.
Yeah.
It's hard for young people to buy houses and to rent.
Now, your parents are both from New Zealand?
My parents are both from New Zealand. My mother is Croatian.
How did she get there? How did the Croatians get to New Zealand?
There's 100,000 kind of Dalmatian, Croatian, Yugoslav people in New Zealand. So it's like a big...
And they've been there for generations?
A lot of them have been there for a long time. There's a lot of wine. Uh-huh. Dalmatians make a lot of wine down there. And so I'm Croatian. I have a Croatian citizenship.
Yeah?
And...
You get that from being Croatian because your mom's Croatian?
I got that from being like, I think of like a bit of a fancy famous Croatian.
Oh.
I think not every Croatian.
They're taking ownership.
I think
she's
they
one of ours.
Up, yeah, so
yeah.
to speak.
Yeah.
My dad's Irish.
Straight up Irish, like from Ireland?
He was born in New Zealand also, but his family is like full Irish. You know, they're O'Connors. He's one of seven.
Full-on Catholic.
Full Catholic, exactly. Exactly.
Full Catholic treatment.
Exactly.
And your mom, Catholic?
I think they grew up Greek Orthodox. Huh. Very religious, but we're not really a religious family.
You're not.
Like more abstract for us, I think.
It's more abstract, the religion
idea?
I
feel quite uncomfortable when I walk into a church. Is that the goal? Are they trying to make you feel?
They're designed to terrify you into being humbled.
Yeah, I feel like I'm so like in touch with the universe on a spiritual level, but I don't get.
And you walk into a church and it just shuts it right off.
It's terrifying.
It's elaborate enough to make you trying to trick you into thinking that's the universe.
Maybe, yeah.
Have you been to Italy?
I have.
Have you ever gone to those cathedrals in Italy where you're just like, what the fuck? Mm-mm. It's crazy.
Maybe that would take it to a level I would understand.
Well, I don't know if it'll make you feel any better.
Oh, that's worse.
But it's certainly designed to create awe.
I am a fan of the awe.
Yeah.
The beauty, terror.
Sure.
Right. Intersection.
Yeah.
You know.
But it doesn't need to be all gaudy.
Yeah, I think it being all gaudy is... I mean, it doesn't get more gaudy than like... A giant beach in New Zealand.
I know,
where
right?
the waves are just like smacking. I
can only imagine. I've not been there. I've been to Australia, and that means nothing. I know that's almost condescending for me to say that. Like yes. I was close.
Yeah, it's
I was
not
relatively close to New Zealand.
Yeah, you got to get down there.
I'm gonna show up at your house and be like, hey, remember?
Please don't do that.
We hung out.
No, I got the spare room.
Yeah,
just book it.
But what did you grow up with? Like, what was your mom like? What if it wasn't a religious house. Did you what inspired you when you were a kid? You know, like what was your what did they lay on you? Your parents.
What did they lay on me?
For better or for worse.
For better or for worse, they just. I think like my main thing when I think about it is like my mum is a poet. She was a school teacher.
Was she a real poet?
She's a big deal. She's like a real poet.
Like
she's won awards in New Zealand.
Like
she's
an amazing. A lot poet. Of books out.
She's put books out. Yeah, she's put. She hasn't put one out in a while, but they are all like big deals when she puts them out. She's badass.
Yeah.
But I think
poetry's
she sort of
tough.
Oh, I couldn't imagine.
But
I find it.
But you're a songwriter. I mean, you do know.
Oh, it's so different though. I'm writing short stories, you know.
Right.
I'm not writing poems. But
so what kind of form does she, is she like free verse or was she tightly structured? Like
she's pretty free verse. Yeah. She's so good.
And you were reading her poetry like when you were a kid?
I wasn't, but I think what she really instilled in me was this like sensory kind of like magnification. Like I'm so governed by all of my senses and all the work that I make. And
yeah.
I have like crazy synesthesia and like,
what is that?
Synesthesia is like when like senses overlaps of me, you know, colors and textures and tones correspond with music and words and kind of linguistic stuff and oral stuff. So
how does that manifest itself? Like, do you like go into an overload, or like when you hear certain sounds, you see things? Or
it's a lot.
Like, do you have to stop talking sometimes?
I have to. Yeah.
Is it medicatable?
Do wish sometimes because it is very overwhelming.
Like, what does it feel like when it's overwhelming to have that?
I mean, it like guides a lot of the music that I make for sure. I make very visual music.
Yeah.
Very like colorful.
Yeah.
Music. So like for me, when something is like just at like peak, you know, ultraviolet or peak blue or whatever, I'm like heading in the right direction, but it can be a lot and it is like hard to, I basically have to make music with my eyes closed. Like it's a lot to, I can't, you know, some people have TVs going in the studio. Yeah. I would find that impossible.
Because, you know, my girlfriend has this the hypersensitivity thing where noises kind
of... Yes, yeah.
I forget what it's called, mm-hmm, it's, mm-hmm. But it's a real thing.
Yeah, it's a real thing.
Where you're like, if you go into an echoey room, you're like, I gotta get out of here.
Yeah. I've been in a couple of near car crashes, and both times the person next to me has said, why did you put your hands over your ears instead of your eyes? You know, most people would not want to look, but I don't want to hear it like this.
Because it'll just blow your mind out?
Yeah, it's too potent. It's terrifying.
So how did you, like, what music were you listening to as a kid where, you know, this wouldn't, you know, destroy your brain?
I mean, everything sort of destroys one's brain. You know what is quite good for synesthesia is, weirdly, guitar music is not so overwhelming in terms of, like, I can listen to...
Acoustic guitar music, you mean?
Like, I could listen to Neil Young, or I could listen to,
good.
Even Fleetwood Mac was not so overwhelming synesthetically.
Like, which era of Fleetwood Mac? The Girls, or... I go way back with Fleetwood Mac.
I go way fucking back with Fleetwood Mac.
You go back to the blues?
I'm Peter Green.
Come on!
Come on! I mean, I was just saying yesterday, I was like, I need some Peter Green Fleetwood Mac merch, because they have... Rumors Fleetwood Mac merch. Everyone's got Tango Fleetwood Mac merch.
I just bought
Where's
it.
The Peter Green Fleetwood Mac
I just
merch?
Got a Peter Green
got
record
a t-shirt?
I didn't even know about. I
Which
talk
one?
About him constantly.
I'm obsessed with Fleetwood Mac, Peter Green. And I think you have to think of them as two different bands.
They're so different.
It's the greatest shit ever. And it's so fun to start as a Rumors Fleetwood Mac fan
and go back.
His entire... I mean, it's like Genesis. It's like
getting
to hear like, the two Genesis.
Yeah, you know? but the thing with Genesis is like those guys, Peter Green becomes this mysterious figure.
Oh,
like
insane.
Did you see the documentary?
I have not seen it. Whoa. I've heard about it. I got to see it.
You can just watch it on YouTube. It's a man of the world.
God, I'm obsessed with
it. He's just this little chubby guy now, like an old, like a little old dude.
I wish people gave him more credit.
I never, you know, anyone who knows about Peter Green, I never shut up about it.
It's the best.
He's the best singer, the best blues player.
It's the best. So that stuff is a little more, that's a bit intense synesthetically, but so like stuff growing up that which I've sort of all just come back to now, like Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young, you know.
Sure.
All that, like just like simple Graham Nash demos, like listening to the
Graham
stuff.
Nash guy? You like a Graham Nash person?
Obsessed. The best. You're not a Graham Nash person.
You're
a Stills person?
I can do. I like Stills' voice.
I can imagine being more of a Stills. Graham Nash is like for the ladies.
I guess so. Yeah, he's very. Yeah, he's a little too.
It's a mosh.
Yeah. Stills is a little like I like Stills' early guitar play. He's a great singer. I had Crosby in here. He's great.
Shit.
You know who said nice things about you is Randy Newman.
Oh my goodness! Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
He's like, I'd like you to write a song for. I like to write a satirical song for like someone like Lord.
Oh my god.
Randy he Newman. He said that.
Shit.
Yeah.
Well, thanks, Randy Newman.
Yeah, Randy Newman's great. So you're going back to those guys, the harmonies and stuff. You love it.
Yeah. So I sort of like I fucking love it, and I love like Mamas and the Papas. Like that gets a little bit intense synesthesia wise for me.
Oh yeah.
Mamas and the Papas is
because
like,
of all the voices.
Well, just. Not the voices, but, you know, instantly they're just like, there's this crazy modulation going on. Or all of a sudden we're in a different key and it's like, that can get crazy synesthesia-wise. Put on some Mamas and Papas, that's like, go there. Now,
but is it a good feeling?
It's the best.
Good.
Okay. It's, again, it's beauty terror. It's horrific and it's wonderful. It's very frightening.
And it's built in.
It's fully built in.
You don't have to outside yourself to
access. So getting off this train, it's what I'm dealing
so
with.
So where the hell did you find Peter Green?
Where did I find Peter Green?
Because someone's got to turn you on to that shit.
I remember I got into this, I was on YouTube in like a YouTube hole when I was like 14. And I found this, just like a 20-minute like, they just must have had some like room mic going and they just sort of all, he's just sort of talking to everyone and they just sort of start.
The sort of depth of sadness and feeling in his playing and his singing.
Oh my God.
It's sort of mind blowing.
Oh fuck, Showbiz Blues.
Oh yeah, yeah. That's a great song.
So fun. It's such a great song.
I used to play that before before I performed. I had it on my mix.
Oh man.
Yeah, I love that one.
It's good.
It's kind of a hard one to find.
Exactly. So this is that bizarre little, clip on YouTube. Yeah. It was just sort of them like talking to each other and building it. And I was like, I'm about to have a little moment with Peter Green.
Oh, building the song. What's that experience? Because I noticed like when I was looking at the credits, because I've talked to Antonoff before and he's like a little wizard.
Mm.
And, you know, I like his whole story is kind of amazing. He's such an amazing musician, but he's also got, you know, an incredible feel for things. Like the difference between, what is it, Steel Train and mm-hmm. Bleachers is mm-hmm. kind of profound.
Yeah.
And that like he just sort of, you know, he kind of appropriated this sort of hippie trip to sort of ease him through grief.
Absolutely.
And then, like, he was sort of done with it.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, mm-hmm. he didn't look back on that album or those albums. But he obviously has gotten an amazing talent and intuition for music.
Mm-hmm.
So when you see something like Peter Green and those guys just building up from a song, how do you guys do it? Because I noticed on the credits, I don't know where I looked at them up, maybe on Wikipedia, there were people involved, but it didn't say who played the instruments. It said people mixed or produced, or like it was a bunch of producer listings.
Yeah, yeah.
But like, who the fuck's playing piano? What's going on?
That's a good question. What the fuck's going on? So our process is like, everything with me starts like in the smallest possible capacity. I don't like to write with anyone in the room. Like, it's very minimal, you know, it will really just be two bodies and that will be Jack and I.
But did you show up with these songs for the new record or?
I would show up with like big arms of them. I like to let stuff happen in a room because I think it can be kind of amazing.
Yeah.
And we would sort of sit at the piano and kind of things would start growing and then like a lot of that production stuff is because we wouldn't let anyone in our room, we would send it out, get it back, get the session, take tiny little moments and add them to our mess.
But like, what are those moments? Like, I don't like for me, like I'll record some guitar in here.
Yeah.
Like, but
yeah, yeah.
But it seems like things are much more complicated at the level that
electronic music, like it all gets a bit kind of weird. I mean, obviously Jack is playing a lot of like analog synths all the time. He played the piano on the record. There are like occasional guitar
piano
moments. There's a lot of piano. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Big old.
But it's actual piano.
Real.
And Jack's on that.
And
he's playing some guitar.
Tickling the old ivories. Uh-huh. So he played a tiny bit of guitar. A lot of synths. And then we just programmed a bunch of drums. And
that was it?
It's kind of it. I mean, my last record, I had literally not one real instrument. And not one in the whole record. Not even a nice analog synth. We were fucking broke.
It makes me sad.
Why? I think it's magical. I think
it's definitely magical. But, you know,
I come from that like culture of like no one having any instruments and just.
What does that mean?
We just like sounds come from computers and like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it's kind of, I think it's really magical. There's something kind of like communist about it. Like you don't have to often as you get like more into music, like, it, you know, I started making like a second album, which by that point people are like, oh, should we show you some rich stuff? And they like put you in the rich studio, you know, show you like the rich mixing desk and you're like, this doesn't feel like any kid could have, you know, I love the idea of every kid getting the same set of cracked plugins so that they steal like from the internet.
Right.
And like, that's how we made the song that won us a Grammy. It's literally cracked plugins.
That that's how you made Royals?
Yeah.
And you didn't
pay for Pro Tools for like a year after that. Like, we should start paying for this thing. So don't worry, Pro Tools, we pay now. I guess it's not a culture that I come from, you know, I don't play any instrument well enough, really. But I can
program
the shit out of a drum, you know.
Yeah, that's what you grew up doing.
Yeah.
But you didn't, like, when you first started singing or writing songs, when did that start? Like, I know it's all in, it has to be relatively recent memory, you know, because you're...
I started singing and stuff.
Yeah. I mean, like, so did you do it in school? Were you a performer or what?
I didn't really do it in school because I feel like you had to know how to, like, read music at school, which I couldn't do. But I was, like, in and out of the, like, I was always in the barbershop room, like, putting together some crazy barbershop quartet piece, which I feel like is very much my roots now. You know, I'm like stacking vocals like crazy.
Oh, you were, like, what's the barbershop room?
You know, like quartet music.
Sure.
Like,
yeah.
So you're putting together like baritone and bass, and
so you're doing that by yourself.
Crazy blends. No, I would be with like the other like singing nerds. You
okay,
know?
So there were humans involved.
There were sometimes other humans involved. And I was in like a theater company when I was a kid, like a local.
Kids theater,
yeah.
So you're a show person?
I was somewhat a show person, but I was like cripplingly nervous and like I'd have to step so far outside of myself for that to like even be something I could do.
Right.
And even now I'm like, it's very hard for me to like be an outward person.
Is it? So do you have to go into like a trance almost? Because it seems like when you perform, it's very engaged and very, like, you know, like it has an effect.
That's what they say.
Yeah, well, you
they
must.
They say it makes people very uncomfortable.
No, I could have.
Hey, I'm enjoying looking at this hammer, just as a side note. What's going on with this broken hammer?
With the broken hammer?
Yeah. Peter Green.
It
dropped it off one day.
Yeah, it's a Peter Green artifact. That's actually Peter Green's hammer. I think I found it on the street.
And I like this.
I don't know. It was a piece. It was a
with
fragment.
The cat.
Yeah, that's an unpressed record right there, that orange bit.
Oh, fuck.
Shit. That's right before they squish it into a record.
That's amazing.
Isn't that wild?
I've never seen that before.
Yeah.
I love that.
Sorry,
I cut you off.
Performing.
Yeah, I mean, it's... I really have to just dial all the way out of the rest of my life and all the way into that and like totally live inside it to be
all
able
in.
To do it. Yeah.
Do you choreograph?
Oh no. I mean, I choreographed a dance for the first time at the VMAs the other day.
So you don't do that kind of show?
Oh no. I just let it happen.
Yeah.
I think it was like fun. All of a sudden you're like,
that's great.
I'm on my knees on the grass
and you're kind of
200
like,
meters away from the stage.
What's happening?
Everyone's like, get back here.
Does that happen? Do you go that far?
Like, I run. I really run. Run far. I've gotten way far before.
And it feels good to do that. Like,
feels,
you know,
amazing. I always take my shoes off down there as well.
When you perform?
Yeah, if it looks like there's not going to be a bunch of like used syringes down there, I'll like to just take a shoe off and for a run. Yeah.
Well, that's good. I'm glad that you're at least careful.
Yes.
So you're doing barbershop music with other nerds.
Mm-hmm.
You're in school. You're performing a bit. But at some point, there must have been, you know, how does it come together that you start writing and performing music? It wasn't all electronic at the beginning, no?
It's always been pretty. It's way less electronic now. Like,
yeah.
The fact that I had, like, you know, I had this big renaissance with, like, all of this 60s and 70s guitar music. And, you know, I truly come from a very hip hop, very electronic background, and the vocal stuff was kind of the main life element for a long time.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I got into it, I guess, like, I started, I mean, I've always been a singer.
There's never been a guitar guy in your life?
A guitar guy.
You know, the guy that plays guitar.
I mean, there was like, I did like a handful of, you know, I played some like covers when I was like 12.
Yeah.
For a short time.
You're saying that like it was so long ago, but that's like a year before you became famous.
That was like a solid 9 years ago, Mac. I will have you know.
But you were on the
hot
brink.
Decade.
Yeah.
Yes. I think when I was 14, I started like properly writing music. We wrote Royals. I was 15.
And then who's we?
Joel and I. So Joel was the guy who I first started writing songs with, and he
where'd you know him from?
Produced stuff. We met in New Zealand.
He's a New Zealand guy?
Yeah. He lives in LA now.
He's a producer.
He's a producer and a songwriter, yeah.
Did he find you?
He did not. We were introduced. I like basically was sort of approached by the record company.
Because you were performing where?
Because they saw me sing in a school talent show. They saw a video of it.
Like high school?
Intermediate school. So that's
junior high.
Yeah, it's sort of, yeah.
So they were like, you got to see this. Someone said
you got to see this.
Someone's parents would tape
you.
So
get this. So this is the guitar guy, the short-lived moment of guitar guy. His parent actually sent it in. My parents were like, what are you doing? Yeah. How dare you do this? My parents are like, we want you to be a lawyer. Like, don't do this.
So you were on stage with that guy and his parents shot it?
Yeah, his dad shot it, I think.
And at that time, it was you singing and he's playing guitar.
He's playing the
guitar guy.
His name is Louis. He's a very sweet boy.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. And are you guys still friends?
He lives in a different country now, but I'm going to try to see him on tour.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So you and Louis, so Louis' parents are like, just these kids got something. And they send it into a friend of theirs who they know, or?
I'm not actually, like, that part of it is weirdly unclear to me. And it's something that I've never, like, pursued because it was just one of those bizarre, like, moments of fate, I think.
Yeah.
But for a long time, the record company were like, we want you to do this thing. And I was like, no, thanks. Like, I don't.
What was the thing?
Well, so funny. They initially were like, oh, we could just, like, you know, Joss Stone you know, just, like, sing a bunch of, like, old school songs.
Yeah.
She was wonderful, but you know, I knew that, like, I was already writing then and, like, you know, making my own clothes, and like my room was just like this insane fucking collage fest. Like, it was never gonna be like, I was never gonna like sit down and sing like A Change Is Gonna Come, you know what I mean? So I was like, let me just
making your own clothes,
think about a way this is gonna work. And so they sort of introduced me to a couple of like songwriters.
Yeah.
Then I met Joel.
Right.
Then I realized, oh, fuck, I've just met the rest of my life. Like, this is what I'm going to do for the rest of my life.
He impressed you.
He showed me what it was that I could, like, I didn't understand how fucking compulsive writing a song is and having it tick.
Oh, really?
The boxes you need it to tick in your brain. And that was, like, the first moment where I really met my synesthesia in a big way, writing songs. And it's just, like, it's like drugs, you know, seeing all these colors and just sitting in the studio and chasing it for like 18 hours because you're like, I just have to get this thing down. Like, I was like, oh God, it's very clear to me. I've met the thing that is going to compel me for the rest of my life.
Well, so like when you talk about a challenge like that, like, because I've only, you know, I recently watched the Jimmy Iovine.
Oh yeah, I haven't seen that yet.
Dr. Dre thing. Mm-hmm. You know, to spend 17 hours on a song.
Mm.
Like, okay, let's take a song. Like, I'm sure you've talked about Royals enough, but let's now that you know this is the new album, when the single is Greenlight, which I saw you do on SNL, and it reminded me that I liked you because my only experience really in it has been visual both times and singing, but it was with the Nirvana induction,
right?
Like, that's the first time I saw you where I was like, what the fuck just happened? So.
Me too. I was like, Chris Novoselic is up here. What am I doing up here? It's stupid.
But like the challenge of a song like that. So you're sitting with Jack. Now, what do you do for 17 hours? So you have words and what's the nitpicking?
Oh, the nitpicking. I mean,
like when, like,
Jack would happily not nitpick to the level that I mean, I'm just, I really come from such a, like, I grew up listening to all this like classic 70s music, and I also just was obsessed with pop music. I was a kid in the best pop music time ever, which was, you know, 2001 to 2007, right? You're like, fine.
Yeah.
Well, if we take the 80s out
Who are these artists? Tell me, because I don't know.
I mean, just, you know, it was like, it was the Timbaland moment. Was like, you know, we have Nelly Furtado making the most profound pop music of the 2000s.
Yeah.
Like, it was just, you know, we have Justin Timberlake making huge sex love sounds. Like,
right. So these like, that was your aspiration.
I just, I saw how powerful it was when you really... believed in the like tenements of it, and you really stick to the rules of it.
Like what? What are the rules?
Well,
tell
just
me.
Like, you know, if you add an extra syllable onto some, you know, onto a verse in a pop song, or if you fit in a word that doesn't quite sing when you sing it, like you're just shooting yourself in the foot. You have to be so.
And you're looking for that hook too, right?
I mean, like even in Royals, I think on the first day it went Magnum's Maybach, Diamonds on Your like Magnum of Champagne.
Yeah.
But Magnum's Maybach, that doesn't fucking sing. Like, even if you want the word Magnum's in there, it's like, no, 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 no. We got to bounce Crystal Maybach. You know, it's just shit like that you have to obey.
Yeah.
And so I really like, so the meticulousness comes from like.
I want you to sing the whole verse now.
Oh, God. I'm so sick, Mac.
No, I know. It's just so funny.
I almost died.
You're just making an example. And I'm like, oh, that's the, yeah, that's the from bit. This album.
Yeah, but so like with a song like Greenlight, it's like, it's just like, I'm very specific on like tenses and stuff. Jack would be like, just, you can just say this, it sounds good. And I'm like, no, no, because using that tense completely transforms this.
Like then or now kind of thing?
I don't know. There's like little things like, so the first verse goes, I do my makeup in somebody else's car, which is like a specific vignette from my life.
Yeah.
Literally sitting in the front seat trying to do my eyeliner
in
a different boy's car.
Yeah.
Which is like very like, boom,
yeah,
new relationship. Second verse is, so it goes, I do my makeup in somebody's car. Next one is, sometimes I wake up in a different bedroom. You know, it's just those tiny little things that cinch your pop song together in the best way.
Yeah, and they're tight. They're poetic and they have
like math,
they have legs. Yeah, there's math, but the images...
Mm.
You know what I mean?
I think so.
Yeah, they're very concise.
I think I'm like the biggest Carver head of all time. I just grew up reading
you like
Carver.
It tight. You like it tight.
I like it fucking tight.
Tight and sad. If you like Raymond Carver.
Tight and sad. That's the vibe. Dancing and crying. Tight and sad.
Good.
That's it. Yeah.
but so there was like 4 years between these records, right?
Mm-hmm.
What were you doing? Just having a life.
I was touring for ages.
You
I feel
were
like people
on
forget.
On Royals,
like,
on that first record? On
Pure Heroine, yeah. Pure You're like, Heroine? What is it? Let me find it on the computer.
Well, I've been
it's okay,
I listened to it.
It's okay.
You're an easier artist to research. There's only two fucking records.
There's two records.
You know, like,
simple,
even if I like somebody.
What are you going to do when you get Peter Green in here? You're going to have to like.
I've had Neil Young in here.
Oh,
I've had people.
Shit.
I've had people with, like, you think they only have. You love five of their records.
Yeah, yeah,
and you
yeah.
think maybe they have 10 records out.
No,
but then you
yeah.
go look, they're like, oh, there's 90.
Oh dear!
But it gets a little tricky. But you know what's interesting though is it's two records. But like because I talked to Antonoff and I know that this math you're talking about, it's sort of fascinating.
Mm.
The idea of fully consciously making a hit record. You know, like to make a pop song.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, like and I when I heard Greenlight for the first time when I saw you on SNL. And it goes into the like the little Caribbean almost.
Yeah, the French house little moment. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'm like, oh, this is going to be good. I'm moving around.
I'm visualizing you like boogieing.
But, yeah, I can boogie. Right. But was that in the like, because the song is about moving on, right?
Mm-hmm.
So where'd the island theme come from?
The island theme, well... I would say it's more French than Caribbean. I'm gonna hold it to that part of the world. But I don't know. It was just like an interesting vibe. That sort of actually came from Jack. That the idea of that French piano kind of knocking in.
Yeah.
It felt so sort of joyous.
Yeah.
It's like important to signpost that joy.
Yeah. So it was just an idea you had in the moment. That was part of building the song.
Yeah, I think that was.
Did
just
you have
like,
the words already?
They came, I had the first verse, which like was in another song in this really different context. And I had the thought you said that you would always be in love, which is very like Shangri-La's, you know, like all those sort of rhythms.
Yeah.
So I had like a lot of it sort of coming together, and then Jack kind of introduced that piano part, and then we're away.
And is Jack like referencing, that he knows where you're going with these references? Is he contributing references?
We definitely, I would like play him, you know, I'd play him that Shangri-La stuff, right?
He
definitely, we don't sit around playing a lot of references, but we do, we'll take a lot of songs to the piano. So we'll take like, you know, a Crosby, Stills, Nash song and like just
which one
tear
you,
it apart.
Like which one?
I think I enjoy those guys most separated out. I get the most out of them
with
as separate
like
people.
Nash
but I mean, like we would play Our House and like work out these little, you know, things that make it such a special pop song.
Yeah. Oh, that's a sweet song.
It's sweet.
Is that Graham's?
Him and Joni, but I think Crosby's a big part of it.
Oh, yeah. He'll tweet. Tweet at you if you tweet at him.
Oh, I can't. I can't meet my heroes. It's too stressful for me. My fear is that I'm going to meet Paul Simon somewhere and just fall over.
How fucking good is Paul Simon?
How fucking good is Paul Simon? And how underrated?
I don't think he's underrated. I think he's done all right for himself. I don't think you got to worry about
I don't think people... I think people think of him as, like, not one of the cool guys. But he is the cool guys.
I think that's true. And I wonder why that happens, too. It's also, like, why don't more people know about Peter Green? I've taken it upon myself for the last 5 years to champion Peter Green wherever
Peter
I
Green.
Can. And Paul Simon gets a little trickier.
Yeah. It's easier to... I can understand why people don't.
Like, I go... Like, lately, I've been championing his very first record a bit.
Oh. Okay. Me too. Wait, furry hood?
Yeah.
Okay, can we just have a moment to talk about Run That Body Down?
Oh my God.
How good is Run That Body Down?
Yeah.
I mean.
It's crazy.
That really does it for me. Because I love baby Paul Simon. He sounds, I mean, like Duncan, he sounds like a little baby.
Duncan kills me.
Doesn't he sound so, you think about that man who's going to sing, he's the child from my first marriage. And you can barely picture him in that kid. But Run That Body Down, I'm like, oh, there he is. You can see the kid that's going to
drive to
Graceland. How long you think that you can run that body down?
Yeah, oh, man.
How many nights you think that you can do what you've been doing? Oh, shit. Okay, good.
Yeah, I did. Like that record. Just
we sampled him on the album.
You did.
We sampled. So there's this Amazing Graceland documentary. He's like driving back and forth from like Montauk or something, and there's this tape in his car.
Yeah.
And it's Ladysmith Black Mambazo.
Yeah.
And he actually can't find the source of the tape, and so he has to go to Warner Brothers and be like, find this tape. This is like so far preaches
right.
Shazam.
Yeah,
you know, it's like a blank tape, and they have to find it. But he says, in the best Paul voice, he says, "What is this tape? This is my favorite tape." And we put it on the album. It makes me so happy that he's on there. And like Graceland was really, I listened to it and it's sort of like, I hadn't listened to it in a while and it sort of like smacked me across the head in the way that like, you know, My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy did when I was like 12.
Which one?
The Kanye record.
Oh yeah,
With the pink cover, you know.
Yeah.
It's sort of like a Kanye record, Graceland, and it's so fucking succinct, and it's like, this is what it is. It's just so kind of
production
obvious.
Production is pretty amazing.
I mean, it's the best. And I just sort of listened to that, and I was like, oh, a lot of these disciplines are what I need to apply to this record. Like, I need to just keep it simple, you know.
Keep it simple, but keep it tight and sad.
Tight and sad. Shit, man. Tight and sad.
How much, like, okay, so you were touring forever because the Royals came out when you're like, what, 14, 13, 14?
So it was actually 16 when it came
16,
out.
Okay. Yeah. So you toured, so you didn't really have much time in between these records? Is that what you're trying
to tell me? Oh, that's where we started. Sorry, that was the question we hit on. Literally half an hour ago before we talked about Paul Simon. Very strong pull around there. So I was touring for like almost 2 years after that came out. I stopped touring.
You wanted to though. You weren't being like driven.
I did want to. Yeah. I did, but I do find it takes a lot out of me, touring.
And you go all over the world.
Oh, we go everywhere. I think we're going to hit every continent.
Okay.
Maybe not Antarctica.
Yeah, and how do you handle that on the road? Do you just take care of yourself? I mean, do you just like, you're not a party person, but I mean, you just.
Not really.
Do you have a structure? Do you like just get
I don't
on
sleep very well, so I find it
general?
Quite difficult. Yeah, I don't think many.
Do you do buses?
Musicians
do
sleep
you
well.
Do hotels?
We do buses. The bus is quite a good sleeping
tool.
We do buses in America and then we do hotels a lot of other places. But yeah, so we did that record.
Yeah.
Then it was early 2015.
Yeah.
I kind of wrote with people, tooled around, nothing really, I hadn't done anything, nothing, I didn't have another album's worth of stuff to write about.
Did you sing on anyone else's records? Did you show up and do things with people?
I did one thing. I was on my friends who were Disclosure, who were like an electronic act in the UK.
Yeah.
Do you like Brian? And I curated a soundtrack.
For the Hunger Games.
For the Hunger Games.
How does that come up? They're just sort of like, let's have this this Lord girl do this.
They were like, do you want to do the end credit song? And I was like, I want to do the whole album, and you have to let me do what I want. And that may include getting an insane song from Grace Jones and having like teenagers be like, what is this bizarre Grace Jones?
You did it.
I did.
And so they just allowed you to curate this.
Mm-hmm.
And did you, were you a fan of the books?
I was a real fan of the movies. I had seen that first movie, and I remember being so gripped by like how good it was and how simple it was for a blockbuster. You remember that first one? It was all kind of handheld, and Jane was just so fucking good.
Yeah.
And it was just her in the forest the whole time, and she just crushed it. You know? So I was like, I'm gonna do this.
Yeah. And they just let you do it.
They let me do it. They literally, I just did it on a tour bus for 5 months. And we had like, we got Simon Le Bon on there doing like this awesome verse on my friend Charlie's song. It was fun. We just did all this weird shit.
Simon Le Bon. Did you decide Simon Le Bon?
I decided Simon Le Bon. And he signs off all of his emails with whoosh.
He writes whoosh?
He writes whoosh, which I think is kind of a very Simon Le Bon to like whoosh the email out into the atmosphere.
So you really like, you know, you're sort of like obsessively feeding this, you know, personal rabbit hole full of music.
Yes, it's very selfish.
No, it's good. It's good because it gives you all these different points of reference.
I think so.
So okay, so you were working, in other words. It wasn't like you took like all this time off to, you know, kind of have
working,
a life or whatever.
Yeah, no, I haven't had life. I really, but work is like, I don't feel like I need to relax because work is...
Yeah, like, it's time to work.
And it's like I'm feeding my soul also. So, you know, if it was like just like number crunching or something, that would be terrible. But
But once you perform, once you get it all together, once the song comes together, I mean, it seems like doing electronic music. Are you a Brian Eno fan?
I'm kind of a Brian Eno fan. I think I need to go there more.
Yeah, it's too old.
I'm like Phil Collins. Like, that's my pop shit. You don't like Phil Collins?
I don't know, man.
You don't like Phil Collins? Fuck!
Yeah.
Shit, man. Eno?
But look, I know the songs. They played them a lot. I don't seek them out. There's something about him personally that annoys me.
Really?
I don't even know what it is. Are you friends with him?
No.
Have you met him?
No. I mean, I'm a troll from New Zealand. Why would I have met Phil Collins?
I don't know. You'll meet people. You can meet whoever you want. Randy Newman would play piano for you happily right now.
I can't handle it. My favorite pop males are the guys that sound like a combination of your boyfriend and your dad. That's Phil. He's your dad and he's your boyfriend.
Okay.
It's the best.
I'm not going to begrudge you it. And I know that
I wish you liked Phil.
Oh, God.
We can talk about it.
I'd rather sell me on Phil. Okay, give me the boyfriend dad thing.
Oh, boy. Okay.
What is it about? Which Phil Collins songs has inspired you the most?
Ooh. I mean, I think the disciplines of a lot of the like real pop ones have like inspired me very tangibly, but the one that I would play to you if we were like dark outside would be Take Me Home.
Okay.
It just journeys it. He's like, he's singing from the perspective of a mental patient or something, but it, you know, it's so simple. Yeah. And it's just the drums. Take me home.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Because I don't remember. Take me home. And it's just all these harmonies.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a 6-minute song.
Okay.
I have no far horizons.
Yeah.
I don't like to go outside. You got to listen to it like in the rain sometimes.
See, like, no, but like you're helping me appreciate it. No, I can love it.
What about Something Happens on the Way to Heaven?
I'm late to the party with a lot of things because I don't know how to get in.
Oh.
And just hearing you do that.
That's a great point. But it's pure pop.
I don't. All right.
Sugar.
Pure pop.
It's full sugar.
Okay. All right. I can understand that.
Yeah.
It's really a personal problem I'm having with Phil.
I can understand that.
I know that he's a musical wizard. I know he's one of the magicians. I get it.
I think when you're like a little drum kid, you know, someone like Phil Collins is like Jesus because he just like, he taught all of us how to do it.
Yeah. So this record, I'm gonna listen more intently now. I'm gonna take your advice, because like when you talked about, because what you do vocally, which is, you know, what you do, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
You have to have certain, you know, launching points. And, you know, when you just captured that moment of what he did vocally, mm-hmm. it would make me appreciate that more.
Oh.
Do you see? Because like,
so well, though.
I don't even notice those things all the time.
Right.
Like, I know when Bowie changes pitch on Heroes, mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. I'm waiting for it.
Of course. Yeah, yeah. Oh, shit.
You know?
Of course.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, and I can definitely appreciate him mm-hmm. in all his nuances.
Absolutely.
But I'm much more interested in him as a person.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, I've got to somehow get past my judgment of Phil.
Right.
As this annoying little guy.
Well, are you a Eurythmics person? No.
No, I don't mind.
That's probably another one that you like.
No. But
do you like him?
He's okay. He's annoying, but I can take the Eurythmics record because of her.
Are you
and I
into
like him,
the best
right.
Tom Petty song of all time, Don't Come Around Here No More?
Of course.
Dave Stewart?
Yeah.
Right?
Yes. I don't have a problem with Dave Stewart. And he can play guitar, too.
Did you have a problem with me calling that the best Tom Petty song of all time? You're like, a little bit.
A little.
What's your favorite Tom Petty?
Well, I actually like Tom Petty. Oh, yeah, very much.
Yeah.
There's some songs off the second. There's like that country song, Mystery Man, on the second record, mm-hmm. I think. And mm-hmm. I'm a big fan of that very first record.
Mm-hmm.
I love American Girl.
Mm-hmm.
But I also love.
I love American Girl, too.
Yeah, there's so many Tom Petty songs.
I just got the boxes. We're very spoiled. Oh, shit.
There's two boxes.
Oh, my God. I need the boxes.
You need the box. Do you do vinyl?
Not really.
That's all right.
I've had a few moments where I've put on a record and I've put it on at the wrong speed.
Right. Why would you do vinyl? You don't even do instruments.
I don't. It's a little past my... I mean, it's like very...
I know, it's old guy stuff.
It's not, though, but I just... Not a vinyl nerd. I would want to be.
So let's talk about...
Sorry, I really took you down a rabbit hole with the Phil, Dave Stewart, Tom Petty.
No, I like Eurythmics. And there's that song that she does with... I think it's on a Eurythmics album. It might be on a solo album. I'm not sure. But no, it's on the one she does with Elvis Costello.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I like that. The one that I like that, like... And again, it's like... It's not it's the same with Phil. It's not subtle.
Yeah.
I think that's why people find it hard to get an entry point. But like, all that stuff is like the reason I make pop music. Must be talking to an angel.
Oh yeah,
must be talking to an angel. It's just like it's bizarre little.
Would
you know,
I lie to you?
It's the best. It's the best.
Yeah, it is. I get it.
Yeah.
Okay. But the funny thing about you though is that your voice, you know, just by virtue of your natural gift and magic, is that it brings a depth to it somehow.
Thank you.
I'm trying not to be undercutting, because I know that there's nothing you're going to tell me that like, oh, the reason that happens.
What do you mean?
No,
about
no.
My voice.
Yes. You.
Maybe.
Yeah.
What do you want to know?
Well, how do you I read a couple of people's how they described your voice. It's hard to describe, but it's very moving. And I guess, you know, because of what we talked about earlier, that you're not a choreographed person. You're not a person that, you know, does anything but fully immerse yourself in the performance, that, you know, you make yourself very emotionally open to having, you know, it seems somewhat, though controlled, raw feeling in the voice.
Mm.
So, like, that's my projection.
Right. No, that's, I think that's right. I think it's like, striking a balance between total rawness and total, pop control.
Right.
So it's like where those two things meet, being able to, like, capture it in this very controlled environment is what I find really exciting.
Well, that's what makes you different and amazing is that
thanks.
That you can have that, you know, because like pure pop is great and, you know, you can dance to it and sometimes the words are cute and sometimes they'll make you laugh or cry.
But is it tight and sad?
Tight and sad. I don't know. Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
But like, how much of this was it? Like, I know it's like, you know, I read some of the press. There's a breakup record and whatnot. Is it?
Are you just
hitting that bell a little too hard?
That's a good way of putting it. I think I hit a lot of bells a little too hard. You know what? I have this thing where I'm like, I realize this about my music. Like, I'm not trying to immortalize anyone. It's not about like carving anyone else's statue in marble. Yeah. I'm only trying to crystallize my own experience. So if it's about the reaction of someone saying something which makes me feel something, which makes me do something, that's cool.
Yeah.
But like, yes, like something can be a breakup record, but I just, the people fall away so fast when it comes to my work. It's like, you'll notice I never really go to length to describe other people. Like it's more just someone will be a catalyst or something they say to me gets reported.
Yeah.
For a second. It's not about, and I think, I mean, that's a Paul Simon thing too. You know, these characters appear,
yeah,
but it really is about him personally and the colors of his spectrum.
And yeah, and it's also, you know, it seems like a lot of good songs are cryptic enough or vague enough to mean a lot to a lot of different things to as many people as possible.
Mm.
Everyone's going to have their own relationship with a pop song or with a lyric, especially if it's not that specific.
Yeah, I think like dancing between like hyper specific and hyper like broad is like a cool.
But like
balance.
even putting your makeup on someone else's car.
Yeah, it's
that like that's a experiential, but it means something.
Mm-hmm.
But it could mean like, you know, I didn't automatically think it was a dude's car.
Yeah.
I just thought that, you know, your life was harried somehow, and you're out doing something, and you weren't driving.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I'm never driving.
Right,
I don't
drive. It's metaphoric.
Yeah.
It still works, right?
Yeah.
You don't drive?
I don't. And someone actually raised an interesting point, which is so many of my songs are coming from this perspective of the passenger seat. They were like, how's the music going to change when you start driving?
Uh-huh.
I'm following the river down the highway through the cradle of the Civil War.
How are you going to do that?
I guess I'm going to do that.
How are you going to take that right? Graceland drive? Yeah. How are you going to go to the Delta?
I got
to
do it. Mississippi Delta, yeah.
But the heartache and the heartbreak was not some major crushing turning point in your life.
I mean, it was, but it was like more what happened afterward that I found like really transcendent. I think joy is like so much more transcendent than pain. I think it's really easy to make work out of pain.
Mm.
Everyone can make something really burnished and special out of pain, but I think choosing joy is like quite difficult and quite noble. It's not chic. Joy is not chic.
No, it's
misery is very chic. You know,
joy, like I have a hard time with joy. Does it come easy to you?
You know what? I think it does, because I think like to be as insane as I am, you have to like find something like that and just stick
as
with
a relief.
It.
As a
yeah, I mean, when I'm like, you know, like I can. The stuff that can make me cry is like, and like deeply move me is so infinitesimal and ridiculous that I have to like find an outlet. I have to find joy in the world also, you know.
Really? So you're saying that you get saddened by trivial bullshit?
Oh my, I mean, I'm just like, I don't know. It was like, I was leaving New Zealand last week and I drove past this like sports field and like the sun was kind of out and like some kids were like training for like playing soccer or something.
Yeah.
And I was just like, fuck, I need to get a handle on this.
This it made you sad?
Yeah. You know.
Why?
Yeah. Oh, I don't know. I'm just, you know, my life is like weird. I think a lot of things are symbols for other things.
But like the simplicity of it, or just the vulnerability of it, or just like that was just what they were doing. I mean, like, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah,
how weird, how moments can be moving without really, you know, you really can't attach where those emotions are coming from.
Yeah, but like every moment is like so, I just find like too much stuff moving. So I think I have to like really make an effort to just find like simple joy in the same things. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. So, right. So
you have a problem with joy, do you say?
Yeah.
Why do you think?
Because it's hard, like like if you're prone to holding on to pain, whatever it is,
mm-hmm.
There's a consistency to it.
Mm.
And I don't know that joy has a consistency.
Like No. There's no steady joy.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that pain, if you're prone to it or mm-hmm. hold on to it, it's a control thing,
mm.
right?
Yeah, I think so.
So, you know, the joy thing, Yeah, like you said, it's the reason it's not chic is because there's a type of vulnerability to it that's very human.
Yeah.
And I think that
it's sort of embarrassing to watch someone experience intense joy.
It is.
You're way more than pain. You're like, I'll just leave you to do this. And I think that's why people find what I do quite disconcerting. I mean, this VMAs thing, like people just, I don't even know if you know about it. People got like so angry about me performing at the VMAs.
Why? What did you do? You were sick.
Danced.
I had just heard you were sick.
I just danced.
Oh.
And I danced with full fucking joy. And people were like, some people were like, we get it and we love it. And some people were like, this is offensive that I have to watch this. And I'm like, oh, it's because it's so private seeing someone experience such joy.
That's publicly. True.
Yeah.
And I think that's a sad thing because, ultimately, that if anything, we should be comfortable with around each other's joy. I'm uncomfortable with it when someone else is having it. You know, like I get embarrassed for them a little bit.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, but you know, you don't you realize there's a vulnerability to it.
Mm. I think it's really like changed
unbridled.
My life, opening up
to the joy,
being very unafraid of intense joy. Publicly
and
privately,
yeah, and then but you can't do it all the time because then you know what you wouldn't
balance.
Get anything done.
I'll end up in the hospital if I have too much joy. They'll go, okay, we'll just put this thing on you,
yeah, medicate that
take
joy.
You away. Yeah,
well, don't medicate your joy. And
nice
thank you.
Parting words.
Yes, thank you for talking to me.
Thank you so much.
Talked about a lot of stuff.
Sorry for nerding out on
Phil Collins.
On Phil Collins.
No, that like you got mad at me, and maybe you should. Oh, I forgot.
Oh, what?
What compelled you to cover that Paul Westerberg song, that beautiful replacement song?
Oh my goodness!
Talk about it. There's your unsung hero.
There's my unsung hero. You know, it's funny. Whose house was I at? Someone just played me a lot of music I'd never heard before, a lot of old music I'd never heard. Mm-hmm. And someone played me that song, and I was just like, some songs you hear really infrequently, and you feel this like, just, you feel like you were robbed. How did they get there before you? How did they express that sentiment before you?
Oh, yeah.
And that one, I was just like, someone wrote this. Someone knew me in another life and wrote the song. So I had to cover it. And we just did it really fast. Like, it was a quick thing. It didn't actually, it was kind of adjacent to the album. But, God, I love that song forever. I haven't thought about that song in a long time.
Swingin' Party?
Such a good one.
Did you talk to Paul Westerberg?
Never.
You got to start meeting some people.
I can't. I'm too, it's too much. What am I going to do when I meet Paul Simon? What do I say
Paul
to him?
Paul Simon?
What do I say to him, you know?
Well, you say,
it's too much. I just shout his lyrics.
No, you just sort of go like, I really love you. Why don't you, what you can do is you can cover a fucking song, man.
Oh, I did. We did, Jack and I sung Me and Julio at Outside Lens the other day. We just got on stage and dicked around and sung.
But
me and Julio.
Why wouldn't you just do, throw a cover of what was that?
Run That Body Down. I should cover Run That Body Down.
Why not?
I should.
The only thing that happens is like, you know, you do this thing that you love the artist, and Paul Simon can put another stack of money on his stack of money.
I don't think Paul Simon's going to make very much money from me singing Run That Body Down.
I wonder about that.
Oh, goodness. Who have you met that's been like your big number one idol?
There's been a couple. Randy Newman was pretty big for me.
Newman,
and Keith Richards I interviewed.
Mm-hmm.
And I just stumbled all over myself.
Cool.
You know, there those guys who, and then there are other people whose work I really like, but Keith Richards was sort of a big deal.
Uh-huh.
And I didn't handle it that well. It's better if I have a little distance. It's better if I know somebody's work, but I don't love it.
right.
You know, because then
I can crush
have,
it.
Well, they can have a good conversation about it without going like, what about that time you did that thing? That was so good.
Oh, that'll be me. Me and Phil.
Yeah.
Shouting at Phil.
Well, maybe you'll be on the same show and it can be sort of a respectful kind of a thing.
I think just shake their hand.
Just don't we don't need to end again, but we're going to end again.
Oh, shit. Sorry.
No, it's a second ending.
Oh, good.
There's two endings to this. Thanks for talking.
Thank you so much.
Okay. All right. So that was enjoyable. Since you guys are enjoying some dirty guitar. I pulled out the dirty one of the dirty Gibsons, and I'm gonna plug it into the dirty old man and just let it rip a little. But you know, just raw gut shit, no noodling.